added. He nodded, smiling.
I grew up in D.C., she continued. I've never left.
You're leaving now, he offered, but it sounded flat. It wasn't the same. There was nothing left to see. But Vienna wasn't looking at Zhang anymore. Her eyes were trained in the distance.
Our scouts, was all she said. He looked too.
They knew something was wrong as soon as the scouts crested the horizon. First, there were only two horses and riders, not three. And second, those two horses were running. Not in the easy loping gait they used to cover miles at a time, but galloping, heads low, ears flat against their gleaming, sweaty necks as the earth churned beneath their hooves.
Code Red!
Malik yelled from behind. It was what they'd used to shout to warn of an impending attack on the Iowa, but it worked for the caravan, too. Chaos erupted. Soldiers on the carriages all steered their horses closer together and whipped them into a rumbling sprint, and the ones riding astride the carriages raced out to meet the two incoming survivors, bows drawn.
Which two?
Zhang wanted to yell to Malik, even though it was wrong. Is one of them Amadi? He was supposed to care about the books, not the soldiers, and if he was supposed to care about the soldiers, he was supposed to care about them equally. Zhang craned his neck over the back of his carriage, but they were crashing along so swiftly it was impossible to get a good look. Malik was shouting for the first half of the carriages to speed up, and the second half to slow down, so that he could work Zhang's into the center for protection. His horse screamed as it flew by. Zhang's driver whipped Holmes in terror until her flanks started to sparkle red. He yelled for Zhang to pick up his shotgun. Their carriage edged up next to the gap in the line to wedge themselves in, and Holmes snarled at the horse of the carriage beside her, who was running wild, unable to feel the reins anymore. She slammed her head into its neck and bit hard until it shrieked and gave way.
I'm here, Zhang shouted to Malik. I'm here, close the gap.
Malik's horse thundered down the line again, from front to back, Malik waving his arm for all of them to bunch tighter. Just then, the two surviving riders reached the carriage line.
Amadi!
Zhang cried. She was there. She was alive. He didn't even see who was the other. Their small cavalry surrounded them to bring them back into the caravan safely, and on their heels loomed the reason they'd been fleeing so fast.
Reds!
Someone screamed. The monsters had found them. They'd grown too confident they'd outrun them, and now the shadowless had caught up. Hundreds of them. The horizon gleamed crimson. They were on foot, on bicycles, on motorcycles that had been reimagined to run without fuel. Some clinging to vicious living gargoyles they'd pulled off the old buildings in D.C. and spent their last precious memories to awaken. All of them probably had just one recollection left. But it was the same one. Kill.
Fire at will!
Malik yelled. Amadi was like a surgeon with her tools. She drew arrow after arrow without moving anything except for her right arm, even at a gallop, lining them up for each next unlucky red without her eye ever leaving the center aim of that long, glittering arc. The fiberglass bent gracefully, and almost as soon as she'd notched an arrow, it would whiz out in a deadly, hissing blur. Another red would huff like the wind had been knocked out of him, and then fall. Horses trampled limbs. Bodies were torn up as they rolled under motorcycles. Shots rang out. Behind, Zhang heard one of their soldiers wail, and then something hit the ground and was left in their dusty wake. He struggled to aim the gun his driver had given him. Amadi rode by, a stream of blood coming down one side of her face, still firing. She had Malik's quiver strapped over her other shoulder now, and Malik had an axe. He raised it up, sharp edge glinting. His arm was a braid of veins and sweat. Zhang looked away as the screams erupted.
General!
Zhang's driver grabbed his arm.
What is that?
Zhang turned to look ahead, where the land sloped upward on the left in a long hill. Something covered the whole crest, row after row, fluttering in hundreds of pieces. Everything was white.
Are those people?
Zhang asked him.
They are!
He cried. They both leaned forward, straining to see across the distance. They were looking for the same thing. If they were people, were they shadowed,
were shadowless.
Shadows! Zhang yelled to alert the others. His heart swelled. They have shadows!
He waved desperately from the top of his carriage as they thundered closer and closer. The wind sent ripples through their strange ivory robes.
Faster! He shouted to his driver.
The Reds pursued, relentless, uncaring, but Zhang's soldiers began to cheer. There was a whole army of shadowed people, standing there as if they'd heard the Iowan army's cries and were waiting for their carriages to sweep past to cut the Reds off and save them. Zhang just had to reach them. But then they started to move. Long before the Iowans' first carriage was anywhere near their lines, they poured down the hillside slowly, sweeping out in front like a large white fan, simple weapons pointed outward. It was a strange position, far more difficult for the carriages to navigate through. At first, Zhang didn't understand. Then he did.
Ambush! He screamed.
A cry of horror went up all around him, as everyone else realized at the same time that the strangers weren't there to help them at all. They were there to do exactly the opposite.
What do we do?
Zhang's driver asked hysterically.
Don't stop!
He yelled as loud as he could, so the rest could hear over the screams of the Reds.
Keep your head down and push through!
Zhang and his driver both ducked as low as possible behind the wooden windbreak in front of their seat as the horses charged. They were close enough now to see the ones in white clearly. Men and women wrapped in layers and layers of billowing, pristine fabric. Their front line dug itself in and prepared to receive Zhang's army like a wall of death. In front, Holmes screamed like a falcon diving for a kill.
Don't stop!
Zhang ordered one more time when the first carriage was almost there. Then his own thrashed wildly as they hit too, and he heard the sound of humans howling as bones broke beneath hooves and wheels. Iowan guns boomed, lightning flashing against the bright day.
But they have shadows,
Zhang's driver said breathlessly as they turned to make sure the rest of their line had made it through.
I don't understand. They have shadows.
All around, the ones in white behind their front line started closing on the carriages as they crashed through the crowd. The Reds flew into a fury, attacking whatever was closest, Iowan and strange people in white. Still, the robed ones came, unstoppable, like some kind of unfeeling, nightmarish hive mind. Vienna pulled Zhang from the stupor of his terror.
Fire!
She was screaming at him from her horse.
General, the ones in white, they lit one on fire!
She pointed backward as her mare pushed to match Holmes's sprint. Zhang jerked around, clutching the top of his carriage. The ones in white were howling now, shrieking almost triumphantly. He saw. Flames licked off the roof of the last carriage in their galloping procession. Dark smoke began to fill the air. What had these strange newcomers done? Why? Around them, the Reds wavered. Half resolved to just kill everyone, Iowan or White Ghost, the other half mesmerized by the familiar roar of the flames and the ones who had created it.
Malik, the books!
Zhang yelled at him as he rode by again. His entire right half was covered in glistening red syrup from other bodies. The axe shone. He almost looked like the Red King. Amadi was there suddenly as well, eyes wild with terror.
The carriage is on fire, she cried.
We can't stop, Malik said as his horse strained to keep pace with Zhang. If we stop, we'll lose them all.
Zhang turned around again. The soldier driving the burning cart was yelling frantically at the rest of them, calling for rescue. Zhang started waving him forward, then kicked a white-robed warrior climbing up his seat ladder. A flying knife barely missed his forehead as the man fell to his death.
How many? Zhang shouted to Malik.
With these, whoever the fuck they are, 10 to 1 at least, he said.
Can we win?
Malik swung his axe, flinging a sheet of blood into the wind.
The Red King and these white ghosts should have sent twice as many, he said.
He raised the blade.
For Emmanuel,
he roared.
Emmanuel,
the cry returned from all around the field. The rally spurred Zhang. He was shit in a fight, but that didn't matter. Malik protected the soldiers, the general protected the books.
You handle the battle, I'll handle the fire.
No, leave it! Malik yelled.
But the engulfed carriage had almost reached Zhang's own, close enough that maybe he could do the stupidest thing of his life.
Zhang! He cried.
Malik, go! Just keep them away!
Zhang shouted. Malik finally nodded and raised his axe again. Zhang ducked back into his carriage and rummaged around. There was some water, but not enough. Not enough to stop a blaze like that.
I don't know how much longer I have,
the soldier driving the burning carriage shouted as he lurched into the empty space where Malik had just been. His horse was soaked, as though it had plunged through rain, sweat streaming off it. It didn't understand why it couldn't outrun the flames. The whites of its eyes glinted in terror.
Stay, Zhang yelled. I'm coming over, as long as we can last.
What?
The soldier cried, face pale with shock. But he didn't jump. He kept the reins and gritted his teeth.
Keep as close as you can, Zhang said to his own driver, and then turned to the one commanding the carriage on fire. You watch the horse, he shouted to him, and pointed at the half-wild beast galloping in front of them. When we're out of time, you jump down onto its back, unhook the yoke and ride off.
What about you?
The soldier cried. Zhang looked at his driver, struggling to keep their own wagon within reachable distance as they flew at breakneck speed. Behind, the Reds cried out all at once, a shrill and keening scream that purged everything in Zhang's mind for an instant. It was the sound of what their color meant, if a color could speak, a dedication to a singular, absolute goal. The horses reeled, hysterical.
I'll jump back to the first carriage.
The soldier stared at Zhang for a stunned moment, but then nodded.
Yes, sir,
he finally yelled back, and saluted with the hand not on the reins. He stuck it out to help try to grab at Zhang once he was in midair.
On three,
Zhang cried.
We are going to the place. I don't know the name, but there is a painting of it on the side of the big moving house. I saw it just now, when we all climbed outside, because we didn't know why we were in the house or where we were going. Then we saw the painting, and the one who makes the house move said we should go there. So we are going there. We are going, but I don't know why. But knowing where is enough, because it is all we have. There are some things that just can't be known. Maybe I said this before. It is a strange way to be, to do things because something suggests you might have done them before. There is no way to know reasons this way. You can only do, not understand. I think before I used to understand. I don't know how this could be, but there are too many things we see to be an accident. These shapes, pictures on flat sheets of metal that stick out of the ground. Someone made them once, for some reason. But they all look different, which means there must be meaning. Otherwise, would they all be the same? Maybe when I looked at them, I never understood. Maybe they are not for us at all. Ori, how... Please, can you hear me? I don't... I think it's happening now, Ori. It's happening. Ori! My Ori! I have so much to say to you, but no time left to say it. Everything hurts. It's a horrible empty stretching. Every moment is a storm, and I'm in the center, unraveling. It's so hard to breathe now. Do you go to the same place when you forget as when you die? I wish memories were stored anywhere else, anywhere at all. My eyes, my fingertips, the soles of my feet. Everyone is so afraid of losing their body when they die, but a body is worthless. A body remembers nothing at all. Nothing at all. It's not what's terrifying to lose. I have seconds left, I can tell. Just seconds. I want to say something important for the very last thing I remember. Something profound and eternal. But there's so little left, and I'm scared to think of any of it at all, in case I do damage to its form. Most of all, I'm afraid to think of you, even though I can't help it. Where did you go, Ori? Why aren't we together? Was it my fault or yours? What reason could I have to ever leave you?
I'm not ready. I'm not ready. I'm not ready. I'm not ready. I refuse to forget. It took all of me, but I refuse to let it have the last thing, which is you. Ori. I remember you. I remember your name. I remember I touched your face on your eyebrow above your scar. I remember a football. I remember night and a mountain. I remember you gave me the speaking machine, but I don't know why. I remember a dark room and writing numbered rules by candlelight. And you cried. Why did you cry? I remember there is something we always say to each other when things are good, when things are bad, when the sun comes up in the morning, when one day it won't, when there's nothing else left. I want to tell you that I remember what we say. I remember, Ori.
Part 4. Orlando Jong. In total, they lost 9 soldiers in the ambush, and the last carriage, everything inside but what Jong had managed to grab and throw to the other driver. Only one, Jong kept trying to tell himself, between spells of unconsciousness. Only one carriage. But it felt like they lost them all. When he finally opened his eyes, he realized they had stopped moving. They had stopped a long time ago. The beams across the low wooden ceiling had finished creaking and settled, and there were no flames. It wasn't the same carriage, he realized then. He was back in his own.
We won.
Malik's voice said somewhere near when he tried to focus his gaze.
Killed every last red, and drove off the rest of the ones in white. We're safe now.
Jong tried to nod. He meant to ask about Amadi, if she was all right.
Max?
His lips whispered instead. He faded again before he heard the answer. The next time he came to, it was almost dark. Jong was leaning against someone as he sat in the grass, elbows propped on his knees. Amadi. He could hear her voice beside his ear, telling him they were almost done. He couldn't hear the other, the one that had always been there to help him before. Jong tried to understand what Amadi meant about the pain. Then he finally did. Oh, the pain.
That's all we can do for now, Fenton said. I'll dress them.
Jong opened his eyes and looked at what remained of his hands. They were terrifying. Purple and black, and covered in monstrous boiling welts. Just the air on them made his eyes sting in agony.
Are these third degree?
Malik asked.
I don't know,
Fenton admitted sheepishly. He was the soldier with the most medical experience, 3 months of paramedic training before the forgetting, but it wasn't very much. He checked the water he'd boiled to see if it was cool. Vienna was carefully opening packages of gauze from one of their first aid kits.
I think so. Blisters mean third degree, I think.
It'll be okay,
Jong said, mostly to convince himself. He was wide awake now. His hands looked so bad he was already starting to panic that a few days from now, when they were infected from the dirt of the road, they'd have to amputate, or try.
We just have to keep them clean,
Fenton said.
You shouldn't have done it, Amadi murmured.
I saved 16 books,
Jong said helplessly. 16 books, 2 hands. Which was worth more? 16 books you could choose, 16 this mysterious gathering one might want. That was different from 16 books chosen at random. The ones Jong had saved he'd selected not by value but by proximity, plunging his hands into fire again and again, grasping for the nearest smoking page. He had no idea what he'd taken. He was just grateful that the carriage that had caught fire wasn't the one that held Paul's book. If that had been inside, Jong probably would have died trying to reach it.
It was noble, Malik finally said, even if it was stupid.
Only one carriage, Jong kept repeating. He tried to convince himself it was a victory. Only one, Amadi echoed later that evening. They were all trying to do the same thing, it seemed. She sat down beside him and Malik on the grass, holding both Jong's and her small portions of dinner. There are still 4 carriages left, Jong said to her, and tried to smile.
Exactly. There are still 4 carriages left, she stammered, repeating his words.
4. But then she gasped raggedly.
Jong didn't understand what had happened at first. It took him a few seconds to realize she'd burst into tears.
I'm sorry, she said.
She set the plates down quickly and jammed the heels of her palms into her eyes, but failed to stop the sobs. She pressed her face into Jong's shoulder. He wrapped his arms around her awkwardly, unable to grip her with his bandaged hands, and held her like that until she quieted. Her tears slowly warmed the sleeve of his shirt as they soaked in, until that side of him didn't feel cold at all.
Who were they anyway? He asked at last, after Amadi had settled back onto the grass beside him, hat pulled low over her eyes.
Not the Reds, the other ones in white.
Malik sighed.
We're not sure yet. Still working on making the one we captured talk.
We have a hostage? Jong asked.
You need to take it easy, Amadi started,
but Jong was already up, stumbling toward the carriages. Behind their wagons, several soldiers stood guard around a small, crumpled shape beneath the tree. The man had been forced into a sit, with his back pressed against the bark, and then a rope looped several times around both him and the tree at chest level, binding his arms to his sides. 2 bare feet stuck out from beneath his robes, resting limply in the grass. Below them, a shadow lay.
The hostage, Malik said when they reached him.
The captured man looked up at Jong with exhausted, defiant eyes. He was covered in so much blood from the fight that his once white clothes were red.
Do you have a name? Jong asked.
Truth,
the man replied. Jong sighed.
Fine. All of you in the white clothes. Who are you with?
We are all truth.
The man coughed and recovered.
Truth is transcendence, he said grandly.
A grin spread across his bloody teeth as he waited for Jong's reaction. After a few moments, it began to fade.
A shame that you have not yet heard the news of the joy our enlightened future will bring.
Malik spat into the grass near the man's foot. The hostage's eyes narrowed.
Denial of the truth does not stop the truth.
Forget truth for a moment, Jong said.
Terrible images from the fight flooded over him. The Reds, their own desperate sprint to escape, seeing an army of alabaster robes appear on the horizon, hoping for help, and then the horror of realizing they were sweeping down to attempt the exact opposite.
Why did you attack us?
Because you were attacking the transcended.
Jong blinked. He looked at Amadi, then Malik, then back to the hostage.
You mean the Reds? The crazed, shadowless horde that chased us across the countryside to murder us?
He checked again, in case he had been mistaken, but he had been right. The hostage still had his shadow.
Why would you try to kill shadowed survivors?
We do not kill shadowed people, the man said. We welcome them to journey with us toward transcendence. We only kill enemies of the transcended.
Malik breathed out, a long, slow gust.
These guys are the real deal, he said.
Insults from the ignorant mean nothing.
Jong shook his head.
You all...
It sounded too crazy.
You all are trying to lose your shadows? You're trying to forget?
We're trying to transcend, the hostage said.
For a moment, all of them were too stunned to speak. Finally, Amadi crossed her arms.
Well, if the Red King is what transcending looks like, count me out, she said.
The Red King?
A violent, terrifying shadowless that took over DC and made all those others, Zhang answered. Don't worry about it now, he added when he saw the thrill in the hostage's expression overwhelm his exhaustion. No point to head north to swear fealty to him. He's dead.
Sacrilege, he hissed.
Should have told him the Red King was still alive and kicking, so they'd leave their stronghold and run off to their deaths. Malik smiled at the hostage.
This isn't our stronghold, the hostage said. Transcendence's spread is unstoppable, but our forces are far beyond our currently settled borders. We've been traveling south for months, after an omen told us to go. A perversion of the Great One's work, shadowless that betrayed us. The false rumors have gone on long enough, and something must be done about them. We march for salvation.
You mean war, Zhang said. Again.
I mean salvation. The last showdown.
Do all of your people so easily reveal your battle plans?
Amadi asked.
We didn't even have to hit you yet.
Oh, I'm not revealing anything, the hostage said.
It's obvious we're heading to the same place. Where else could any of us be going this far south, except New Orleans?
Hearing him say the name made Zhang shudder.
What should also be obvious is how much more quickly we'll reach the city than your massive slow force, Amadi said, and how much forewarning that will mean for them.
The hostage shrugged as best he could with the ropes around him. Pain lined his face for a moment.
It doesn't matter. If this false prophet is even half as strong as the lies claim, they already know we're coming. There's nothing they can do to stop transcendence. When you see what they're doing there, you'll understand. You'll beg to join us.
Zhang had no idea how many people were in New Orleans, if New Orleans was there at all, or how many of Transcendence there were, but judging by the number of troops they sent to help the Reds, and how unconcerned with their loss the hostage seemed to be, there was a greater chance that they were a credible threat to the city than not. Well, we'll have to agree to disagree, Zhang finally said. The phrase struck Malik and Amadi as funny, and they chuckled behind him. Zhang tried to ignore how utterly convinced the man in death-splattered white robes before him seemed. We're right, he told himself. We are. It was true that none of the stories he'd heard about New Orleans quite matched up, but it was also true that none of them had been warnings either. That had to mean something. It meant more than nothing, at least. From what we've heard from other survivors, and we've heard quite a bit, this false prophet doesn't sound like such a bad guy.
That's because all you've heard are ignorant rumors. We know the truth.
The creature must fall for the good of the world. The creature, Zhang repeated. There's one I haven't heard before.
It's the true one. The only name that matters, the hostage replied.
His eyes began to dim. That all too familiar, faraway look. It was only then that Zhang realized some of the carnage on his clothes was the man's own, not remnants from the fight. He's bleeding, Zhang gasped, somewhere from the abdomen.
No, the hostage coughed, but I refuse treatment. The sooner I'm free of you, the better.
Zhang looked at Malik, who shrugged helplessly. Why waste medical supplies on someone we don't really want to save and who doesn't want to be saved either? His expression asked. Don't you want to live to see New Orleans? Zhang asked the hostage, as the rise and fall of his chest became more shallow. He used his last conscious breath to answer.
I already know what's there, and I will stop the creature as part of transcendence, or not go at all. I will not let myself be forced to ride with you as you head into your doom.
Mana's Amadi. The next day, they knew they couldn't wait any longer. You've got it? Zhang asked. The tremor in his voice betrayed his fear. I've got it, Malik said, clamping down even harder on his modified chokehold. I'll keep you still until it's done.
It'll be quick, Fenton added grimly.
Nuz sat in front of Jung, blocking his view of his hands. She had thought they might be out of the woods, but 2 days after the ambush, one of his fingers had started to die. The little one on the left side. The fire had just burned too much. By the end of the next day, it was clear that they would have to amputate it after all, before it took the rest of his hand.
If I faint after, just throw me in one of the carriages and keep moving. I'll come to soon enough, Jung said.
You need rest, Nuz argued again for what felt like the 100th time. She hated that she'd said it. The tone of her voice made her wince. She'd tried to keep him in the same place she kept Emmanuel and Malik and the rest of the soldiers. She couldn't have another Paul, another Vienna, another Rojan. But it was a losing battle.
It's all right, Fenton said. As long as he stays inside a covered carriage and keeps the bandages clean, we can continue on.
It was settled then. Just keep looking at me, Nuz said to him. She slipped a hand against his cheek and clenched her teeth. She waited for him to scream. They stopped for almost nothing after that. They all began eating just once a day, and each night, everyone slept straight on the grass as close to the carriages as possible. One horse stayed hooked into each yoke, loose enough that the animals could doze, but tight enough that all the soldiers had to do if they had to run fast was yank the straps tight and go. 3 days out from New Orleans, they broke for camp once the scouts started fainting in their saddles. Malik made do with a skeleton night watch crew, and Nuz allowed them to build a small fire just for an hour. The men were so beaten down, some of them wept when they heard her agree.
I can't eat,
Vienna said softly beside Nuz as they huddled with the rest of the soldiers to share in the glow.
Do you want mine?
Nuz looked at Vienna's handful of stale, brittle jerky. They were down to only that, the last scraps of dried meat from their stores at the Iowa. There was no time to hunt now, because there was no time to cook or cure anything fresh.
You have to, she said,
even though she knew how Vienna felt. She hadn't even opened her own stash and didn't want to. She was just too tired to even be hungry.
Just dump it all in your mouth at once and then it's over.
Vienna obeyed bravely, as if it had been an order.
Thank you,
she said wearily as she tried to chew. I'll be able to report to my father that, yes, I did eat my dinner after all today. She smiled when she was done.
Oh, Nuz said. My report.
She climbed to her feet and dusted the back of her pants. She realized she'd forgotten to give Jong her daily update on the distance left.
Amadi, rest, Vienna said. It's 1 day. The general won't care.
I care, Nuz replied.
There were just a few days from New Orleans, but it didn't matter. If she started slacking off now, who knew what could happen? When they made it, they had to be even more ready for anything.
I'll be back in a minute,
she said as she turned to make her way around the carriages.
Don't let them put the fire out before I return. I want to soak it up one more time.
It felt immediately colder as she trudged off in the dark. Or maybe it was just her. She made her way to where Jong was set up tonight in one of the carriages. He was the only one who didn't sleep in the grass, in order to keep his injured hands clean. The back door was cracked, and there was a small flicker of light inside from a flashlight. Nuz thought he'd seen her, but Jung had been facing away as she approached. She was about to say his name, but the word died on her lips when she saw what was happening. Jung had unwrapped his bandages to bare his injured hand and was holding it out in front of him. She could see his thumb and the first four fingers, and then the flat spot where his little finger should have been. There was a click, and then Jung raised the flashlight up and aimed it against his hand so his shadow appeared low on the carriage wall beside him. Nuz realized immediately what he was doing.
They both held their breath as the dark shape materialized on the wooden surface. Of course it did, but it was comforting to see. It also had four fingers.
Well, look at you, he said to his shadow, amused. Nice hand.
He wiggled the remaining four digits as best he could, without causing pain to the mutilated fifth knuckle. They were both smiling. Zhang at his shadow, Naz at Zhang. But then his face slowly grew more serious. He put his hand down and tipped the flashlight so it rested lazily against his chest. A vague dark shape in his same form trailed off into the corners of the carriage. He watched it shift as he breathed.
I haven't been very good to you, have I?
He asked his shadow quietly.
Starving you? Taking you to war? Cutting your fingers off? And you stay?
Naz took a silent step back, just to be sure he wouldn't see her crouching in the darkness outside and be angry.
I'm sorry I sometimes wished it had been you instead of Max's shadow.
He looked down at the flashlight.
I understand if you'd want to leave me now after all this, but please just let me make it to the city first. Please let me make sure the books are safe, that everyone gets there. After that, I won't be angry if you leave. I'll understand. But if you still want to stay, there can be a future in New Orleans. There can be more memories. I've started to make them already. I'll make even more if you want.
He stared at it.
If you're in, I'm in.
She didn't remember leaving, but Naz found herself standing by the army's dimming campfire again, watching her own shadow flicker weakly against the embers. Still there. Who knew why any of them stayed or any of them left? Did hers like this new, reluctant hope she'd made for it, too? She wondered. Because she had made something, Naz realized as she thought of Zhang, even though she'd tried so hard to do the exact opposite.
Orlando Zhang. The day they reached New Orleans, Zhang had been awake since before dawn, watching the navy sky. He'd been watching it since before sundown, really. Too tense to rest. Every moment they weren't galloping felt like an ambush was about to spring on them. They were so close. So close. They just had to keep ahead for one more day.
Can't sleep either? Malik asked as he trudged through the grass to the open door of Zhang's carriage.
Not all night, Zhang said.
He glanced through the little tufts of chiming Isinger clouds overhead to the sky.
I know it's still pretty dark, but...
He didn't finish his sentence. It was almost too big of a thing to say.
But we're only a few hours away.
He could feel his heart fluttering against his ribs, like a panicked bird in its cage.
But we could make it before noon if we left now.
Malik rubbed the stubble on his chin slowly.
Rest is important, and the troops aren't getting enough of it.
Zhang nodded. Malik was right. They'd been pulling 20-hour days for a week at least. Their cavalry had taken to riding in pairs, so one soldier could doze in the saddle while the other held her up. Malik adjusted his grip on the rifle he was carrying.
That being said, you know the saying, you can lead a horse to water? But you can't make it drink,
Zhang finished.
I'd bet not a single one of them is in their bedroll like they ought to be.
Zhang grinned. Together, they stepped around the row of carriages to look at the rest of the camp. The soldiers had been trying to act nonchalant, leaning against the wagon wheels or thoughtfully examining their weapons, but as soon as Zhang and Malik appeared against the dim sky, all of them snapped to immediate attention, every single one on their feet in five neat rows. Even the horses pricked their ears toward the two men. Zhang turned to Malik and smiled.
Let's move out! He cried to resounding cheers.
The army came south into Louisiana through the remains of Bogalusa, then Covington. The entire area had flooded from overflow of the old Pearl River, and the roads were ankle-deep in water. The horses slogged carefully, trying to stay on the asphalt and away from the mud. At every corner, wooden buildings sagged, roofs long succumbed to moss and rot. The wind was completely still, and there was a strange fog floating over the water, making the land appear as if it was gently steaming. Alligators, Jong thought, but he had no idea how rational a fear that was, or if he'd even recognize one if he saw it. Who knew what they looked like now? His carriage was in front this time, so he supposed he'd know soon enough if they were lurking. "No one goes any deeper than the ankles," Jong ordered softly. "And no one goes wandering into flooded houses or down any sloped streets." He hoped that as long as they stayed away from the deeper water, they'd be all right. Malik and Amadi patrolled carefully alongside the procession, eyes searching for any flicker of movement, but they saw nothing. Covington was completely empty. "This place gives me the creeps," Amadi said to Jong as her horse fell into line with Holmes.
"Me too," he agreed. "Looks like it's been abandoned for months at least."
She looked at Jong again, and he nodded back. They didn't need to say it to know what the other was thinking. That it either meant very good news about New Orleans, or very, very bad.
"As soon as we make it out of this town, we'll be officially within New Orleans limits," Malik said on the other side of Jong's carriage. "When we see Lake Pontchartrain, we'll have made it."
That's when they cleared the last few ramshackle buildings, and suddenly could see the outline of the distant walls.
"Holy,"
Amadi said, trailing off. They stared. After the last stretch of land and glistening water of the lake, the city rose. Walls that had not been there before the forgetting towered like shimmering cliffs around it. They were so perfectly straight and unbroken. It was as if a smooth, sheer mountain made of crystal had erupted from the earth on the other shore. From somewhere inside, vague tendrils of smoke curled up into the warm gray air of morning. Jong could only guess from so far away, but the walls looked to be 40 feet tall at least, and so long that they disappeared into the humid, muggy horizon before he could see the end. He guessed they probably encircled the entire city, so that the only way in or out was the long, narrow bridgeway that spanned the lake. New Orleans. Jong felt his heart start to race. "We made it." Without a word, they all began to move. Slowly at first, then faster and faster until all the horses were galloping. The Lake Pontchartrain Causeway Bridge was double wide, with a gap between the two sides of traffic. The army streamed into the right lanes on instinct, even though it didn't matter. There was no one else on the bridge in either direction. Their half was three lanes and a shoulder, and Malik and Amadi stayed on either side of Jong's carriage as they raced over the dark, rippling water. The lake was miles across, almost a marathon's length with no emergency exit, no cover at all.
"Weapons?"
Amadi called across the front wheels as they neared, and Malik struggled for an answer. The hooves drummed like thunder.
"I don't know,"
he cried back at last. Jong looked up at the walls again. It meant one of two things. Either the ones inside, the ones with the one who gathers, the creature, that possible new name their hostage had contributed, were civilized and maintained law and defense, or they allowed no one from the outside and would shoot on sight. Jong tried not to think about the second possibility as their carriages clattered past the halfway point toward the narrow end of the bridge.
"Weapons out?"
one of the soldiers yelled nervously from behind a few minutes later. They had all had the same thought as Amadi. The army was less than a mile away now, and Jong could see much better. The walls jutted straight up from the first hint of shore and overtook the exit of the bridge. Once the carriages reached the end, there was nowhere to go. No landing, no small field before the gates. If New Orleans decided to shoot,
they'd never get the horses turned and moving again before they were all dead.
I don't know yet,
another answered the first.
Should we draw?
A third called from farther back.
Dad?
Vienna yelled near the second carriage.
What do we do with our weapons?
I don't know,
Malik cried.
No weapons,
Zhang shouted. He stood up facing back toward the rest of the procession and crossed his arms and swiped them flattened outward over and over.
No weapons.
I hope you're right, Amadi said.
The end of the bridge was rushing up to meet them. Suddenly, Zhang could see movement along the top of the wall. There were platforms on the other side, littered with lookouts, guards, torches. A thunderous clanging started then, and Zhang realized it was a warning bell. We see you. We see you. You are known. As if it had been a cue, the carriages all slowed together, hooves clattering, everything leaning forward. Please don't kill us, Zhang prayed as they slowed to a nervous, twitching halt in front of a set of tall, heavy wood and iron doors. Then for a moment, Zhang forgot his fear. They had come to a stop just a few feet away from the wall, Holmes's nose almost touching the huge metal hinge where it met the gate. He could see it up close for the first time. What is it? He stared in awe. The wall was made of something he couldn't describe. It was almost like it was carved from solid, polished crystal in a melding, swirling hue that shifted between almost diamond clear and dark, dark blue. It was the most magnificent, impenetrable thing he'd ever seen. Just then, a dim shape soared by at eye height inside the wall, then vanished. Zhang pointed, mouth hanging open.
Was that?
He stammered.
Oh my God!
Amadi jumped.
Was that a fish?
Everyone gasped in awe. It wasn't a wall of crystal, Zhang realized. It was something even more impossible than that. It was a wall made entirely of water, for miles and miles and miles. So perfectly still, the surface of it shone like glass.
What is this place?
Amadi whispered.
I don't know, Zhang replied, but we're about to find out.
There were sounds from above now, from people somehow walking on top of the water wall. Every inch of his flesh became keenly aware of the fact that they'd been waiting in front of the gates for a full 10 seconds and had yet to be killed. Slowly he looked up.
State your purpose!
A shout came down from the top. Zhang flinched.
Refuge! He called back. We...
It was almost impossible to believe that he'd come here on a hunch he had heard from a strange woman at a deserted apartment complex almost 6 months ago, and then been begged to believe by a dead friend. Had she and her Broad Street crew made it too, even with so many shadowless in their group? Had they perished on the way?
We heard New Orleans was still standing. We came to join your city.
Was that good enough?
We can contribute. We have...
He was going to say engineers, nurses, guards, lawyers, even though he had no idea what most of the soldiers had done before the forgetting. But the screeching sound of the sentry door in the bottom corner of the great gate cut him off. The water rippled where the hinges connected, a tiny wave traveling across the surface and disappearing. A cluster of men and women in mismatched armor trotted out, each brandishing a shotgun and a shadow. Malik tensed, but didn't move. Zhang stared. If they had enough shadowed survivors to spare, that they would send a whole group of them out to greet total strangers. He couldn't guess how many were inside the city. Hundreds? Thousands? After them came another shadowed woman in simple navy clothes, holding a clipboard. She was taller than Zhang, almost as tall as Malik, with reddish-brown hair and freckles. Her pale skin gleamed in the sun as if she'd never seen daylight in her life. As she approached with her small guard, Zhang climbed quickly down from the carriage
and Malik and Amadi dismounted. The woman's clothes were well worn, but clean and unwrinkled. No bones jutted anywhere. Just a few feet away, she stopped and dipped her head in greeting and said, "Hello." Zhang tried to find his voice, but ended up only nodding dumbly. A gust off Lake Pontchartrain picked up and kicked sideways through their line, tinkling metal carriage links, ruffling his tattered coat, and the papers on her clipboard.
"Do you speak for the group?"
the woman finally continued. There was a faint lilt there, a trace of a French accent or something like it.
Yes, Zhang finally said. "General, Zhang. Zhang from Arlington, Virginia."
The woman's eyebrows arched slightly on her forehead as she recorded the information, but she didn't look up at Zhang until she'd finished.
"Please confirm this is correct?" she asked.
"Yes," he replied.
"You've come a long way,"
she said as she took the clipboard back. She was smiling now.
"I'm glad to welcome you to New Orleans."
Zhang nodded with as much control as he could muster. Someone behind him was weeping.
"My name is Davidia. I'm captain of the wall guard here,"
the woman continued in a more formal tone again.
"I work for the city of New Orleans. We need to record all of your details before we can allow passage, as well as conduct an inventory of your property."
"They're all books," Zhang said. "Almost 3,000. Davidia was very still for a moment.
"You brought 3,000 books from Arlington?"
"From Washington, D.C., Malik said. "From the D.C. Public Library. We saved as many as we could."
Davidia turned and spoke softly but urgently to one of the guards next to her, to go and inform someone at once that
the newcomers brought something.
The young man nodded and bolted away. He's going to tell the one who gathers, Zhang realized. He tried to follow the sentry's path, searching for proof, but the young man vanished into the crowd bustling beyond the gates, and Zhang was lost for a moment. So many people. Their shadows blended into one giant block of shade on the ground, an indiscernible mass.
"We've had reports from a few other survivors who've come from the north. There's no president anymore in D.C.?"
the captain asked hesitantly once Zhang turned back to her.
"No,"
Zhang said. The wind sharpened once more, ruffling Davidia's papers on her clipboard again.
"That is sad news, but it's good that we know for certain. And what you've brought? You've all done well. It may be very useful indeed,"
she smiled.
"We'll find out soon."
"There's one more thing." Zhang put his hand up to stop her before he lost the chance to warn her about the ones in white. "There's a large force on its way here to attack the city. They're moving slow, but they have huge numbers."
"Yes," Davidia said. "Thank you. We know."
Zhang didn't turn to her, but he could feel Amadi's eyes snap to his face, boring into his temple. If this false prophet is even half as strong as all the lies claim, they already know we're coming. What the hostage had claimed turned out to be true, but what did that mean about what he had said next? There's nothing they can do. But Davidia was already busy with her clipboard.
"Before we get any further, I need the rest of your names, please."
"Malik," Malik said.
"Amadi."
The captain went slowly down the line. Zhang waited, exhilarated. As each person gave their information, they all grew more and more overcome until they were almost hysterical with laughter. Amadi grabbed Zhang's arm in the clamor, and he saw there were tears streaming down her cheeks. When he hugged her, he realized his own face was already wet as well. He kept laughing and crying into her hair.
"And the shadowless?"
Davidia asked, calling over the din.
"What?"
Amadi looked at her, baffled. For the briefest instant, a flicker of a feeling Zhang had long forgotten shuddered through him.
"Max," he almost said.
"The shadowless,"
Davidia repeated, and pointed behind them. They had all been so overwhelmed by the sight of New Orleans that they didn't realize until they turned around that in those wonderful few moments, Vienna had lost her shadow. The One Who Gathers. He watched the newcomers approach from his usual place, atop the summit of the small slope at the center of the city, his altar. He had heard some of the others calling the place where he sat by that name, even though it was silly. The buildings behind might be known as the sanctuary now, but his seat was no altar. It was simply a small brick square on the ground, braced from behind by a wall of average height, bare and gently curved so it provided some shelter from the back and sides. The day was clear, the sun strong. He'd seen the carriages even before they reached the walls, when they were still on the far side of Lake Pontchartrain, barely beginning to cross the long bridge. He had summoned Davidia then to tell her they were coming.
"They're not transcendents in disguise, are they?"
she'd asked nervously once she'd reached him at the top of the hill. She shaded her brow with her hand, but the carriages were still too far for human eyes to see.
"No, not transcendents," he answered. "I think they're friends."
Davidia put her hand down and nodded slowly, lost in thought.
"We haven't had that many come in a long time," she finally said.
"We haven't," he agreed. He knew what she wanted to ask.
"A good thing," he said.
"Sorry?"
"Is that a good thing or a bad thing?"
"I think it's a good thing," he repeated. "It means there are still more who wish to remember." Once the hurricane was defeated, it had been very easy to remake Dr. Zade's former assisted living facility into what was now the sanctuary. The storm had wiped the building clean. All the roofs had collapsed. All the rooms had crumbled back into concrete dust and wood chips, except for one of the four walls that surrounded the inner courtyard where the storm cellar lay. Once the winds had quieted, the others helped the amnesiac's body climb over the wreckage as his shadow followed behind, trailing silently over the shattered chunks of stone and glass. When they found that last remaining wall, still standing over a small patch of cobbled brick path, the amnesiac's shadow went toward it, stretching nearer even as his body stood still. Two things completely independent of each other, except for the point where their two pairs of feet met. The shadow rose so he was upright against the wall's smooth blank surface, a dark and solid shape, looking at the others.
"This will do," he said.
His body went closer then, and sat down in the center of the small floor, facing out. It would do. The shadow felt it agree with him. The amnesiac's eyes couldn't see after the accident, not directly, but the shadows could. In that way, he understood what was around them. They were still one, even though they were also more. There was no ceiling where he sat, but thanks to the shadowless, with the hurricane sealed permanently around the city like the walls of a fortress, the weather inside would always be temperate. The grounds of the assisted living facility would be a suitable place from which to watch over New Orleans. From that vantage point, he would be free to stretch and contract over any surface and shape below without obstacle, as far as he could see, and farther.
"I'll stay here," the shadow said to the rest of them. "We can rebuild and expand."
Perhaps no one had realized before, because forgetting was such a terrifying thing that it sent its victims running away from one another, but the amnesiac's shadow had been proven right during the hurricane. It was like with the elephants. He'd realized that while a shadowless's magic was strong, a group of shadowless forgetting the same thing together was exponentially more powerful. There was a strength in the sharing, strength enough to bend nature to their will to save a city, and to restore a destroyed building into a sanctuary, if they decided the price to be paid was worth it. Expand?
Dr. Avantikar asked. He saw the incomprehension flicker in her expression again as they looked at each other. A shadow who could move and talk. And more, a shadow that looked more like the memories of its owner than the physical shape of him. The shadow of a creature instead of a man.
Others will come. They will have felt it, what we've done.
The shadow gestured out at the rest of New Orleans and passed.
Not all the shadowless want their magic, or want it more than their